Are you a dentist who's striving to build a more thriving, profitable practice without feeling overwhelmed by the numbers? Hey, good news, there is a better way. The Academy of Dental CPA member firms know dentistry. In fact, it's all they do. Our members are experienced CPA firms who specialize exclusively in serving dentists across every stage of ownership, from startups to acquisitions, to optimizing associate income, to advanced tax strategy, practice growth, and transitions. We're here to support your financial success. When you work with an ADCPA member, you get more than a tax preparer. You get a strategic partner, someone who understands dental industry benchmarks, overhead management, collections, dental insurance, compensation models, and all the unique business challenges you face every single day. We bring clarity to the business side of dentistry. While you focus on clinical excellence, we ensure your financial foundation remains strong with advisory that turns data into confident decisions. Join over 11,000 dentists nationwide who have a financial expert in their corner. Visit adcpa.org to find a trusted dental CPA near you. That's adcpa.org, because your numbers should work as hard as you do.
This podcast is sponsored by Bank of America Practice Solutions. When you need financing for your dental practice, you really want to work with someone who fully understands your industry. For over 25 years, Bank of America Practice Solutions has helped dentists across the nation reach their goals through smart financial solutions and expert guidance. Whether you own a practice or are just getting started, Bank of America Practice Solutions can provide customized financial help for your short-term needs and long-term aspirations. Email dg.connect@bofa.com to find expert guidance, personal attention, and real solutions. That's dg.connect@bofa.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. My name is Art Wiederman, CPA. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and welcome to 2026. Amazing, it's 2026. As always, I'd like to make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, and please tell all of your friends and colleagues about the podcast, because we've got some great stuff coming up in 2026. For today's episode, which is sponsored by Bank of America Practice Solutions, and our podcast is the official podcast of the Academy of Dental CPAs. My guest is Dr. David Hornbrook, and I couldn't have a better guest to start off 2026. Dr. Hornbrook is recognized around the world as the leading authority, clinician, and teacher of cosmetic dentistry. For the two or three of you of the thousands that listen to this podcast who don't know who Dr. Hornbrook is, Dr. Hornbrook practices dentistry in La Mesa, California, which is in San Diego County. Dr. Hornbrook founded the Las Vegas Institute, which was the premier cosmetic teaching institute in the world. He also founded and operated PAC Live and the Hornbrook Group for many, many years. Now, Dr. Hornbrook does his courses out of the Utah Valley Dental Lab, and he'll tell you a little bit about that later in the broadcast. What I will tell you about him is that we could spend the whole hour talking about his accolades and his lectures worldwide. He is one of 62 fellows of the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, as well as one of 25 fellows at the American Society for Dental Aesthetics. Dr. David Hornbrook, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the invitation. You said you couldn't have found a better guest. I was thinking about a whole bunch of other people that probably would have been higher up on the list, but maybe they weren't available. So anyway, I'm honored.
No. I've known you, David. You and I have known each other for 20, 25 years, and you're as good as it gets. So let's jump into the topic. I always research my guests, and this is fun because you're such a great guy. I know that growing up, you enjoyed painting, sculpting, and drawing. Now, my wife is a professional artist. My audience knows that. She owns an art gallery, and my son is an Italian stone sculptor. So this is really near and dear to my heart. How did all this stuff lead to you becoming a dentist?
Well, a kind of a two-pronged answer to this. One is I've always been very artistic, as I still am. And I realized I wanted to be a quote-unquote doctor, but I wanted to have the opportunity to work with my hands and be artistic and make changes from something that's raw to something that's great. And so dentistry was natural. I mean, that's a natural progression, but it so could have been plastic surgery, right? So kind of interesting story is that my dad was an OBGYN.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was in the day that there was no such thing as false labor, and he was on call all the time, and you know, he had a black little bag with a stethoscope that he'd go out in the middle of the night to help his patients, and he was never around. You know, when I played Little League and I played water polo and I rode motocross, you know, all the other dads were in the stand except for my dad because he was busy, and I totally respect that. And I thought, you know, I don't really want to be like my dad. Someday I want to have kids and I want to have the opportunity to always be there. And there happened to have been a dentist that lived on our block that they had a similar lifestyle. I mean, he drove the same car as my dad, same houses as we had with a pool, and we had the same lifestyle, but he was always at his son's events. So I thought, you know what, I can be a doctor and I can be around for my kids and I can still have the same lifestyle and I can use my hands and be artistic. And I would have never imagined how artistic and creative dentistry can be if you want it to be. And so it's been really a good progression for me, and it's been an amazing profession for me.
Well, that's one of the things I want to talk about today is, number one, you and I both know that no matter what job you have in life, the best job in the world is being a parent. And yeah. Sure, you were at the ball games. I was at the ball games. It's just, you don't want to miss that kind of stuff. And kudos to you. And the great thing about being a dentist is that you set your own hours and you can make your own choices and be at the practices at 3:30 after the kids are at school. It's just wonderful stuff. So,
yeah, well, kind of the irony in all of that was, so that's the beginning of it, right? I have two boys that are 27 and 30 now. And when they were little and going through all that, I was lecturing about 40 weekends a year. So it kind of backfired as I used my creative skills and my passion to do dentistry. I was gone more than my dad ever was, but I can tell you that hundreds of weekends throughout those first 10 years, I would be lecturing even like a 2-day course. I would fly home Friday afternoon to watch my son pitch, and then I would take a 6 a.m. flight the next day to get to wherever I had to go. I tried not to miss it, but I did.
That's what you do, David.
Yeah, that's what you do.
That's what you do. That's wonderful. And I have two boys too, so we can talk about boys on maybe another podcast and how that would work out. So was there a pivotal moment or maybe a case in your career that just said, I really want to point towards cosmetics and aesthetics?
You know, what's interesting is, so I graduated from UCLA in 1986. And at that time, that was before the cosmetic revolution that happened in the early 90s. And so we didn't have all these ads, and we didn't have dentists that cosmetic and family dentistry or restorative cosmetic. Everyone was just a dentist, right? And when I started practicing, I did all the dentistry that you do in dental school. I mean, I did root canals, I did amalgams, I did BFMs, I actually waxed and cast my own gold crowns. And so I was a general dentist, quote unquote. I mean, patients appreciated if I could get them out of pain or get them healthy, but they weren't ever excited about the dentistry that I did. And so I remember the very first time I took out an amalgam and did a posterior composite. And again, this is early in the evolution of composites. And the patient looked in the mirror and looked up and thanked me and said, oh my God, this is amazing. When can we do these other ones? And I said, you know, we don't have to do those other ones. They're okay. And she said, no, I want to do those other ones. And then as like a light bulb goes off in the head, it's like, wait a minute, this is now a patient that not only appreciates the fact that I'm taking care of them and getting them healthy, now they appreciate the fact that I placed a restoration that was invisible and aesthetic. And from there, it just evolved. You know, I'm a firm believer that the more you enjoy something, the better you're at it. So I started working early on with Bob Nixon in the late 80s, early 90s, doing veneers. And I would just ask my patients, I would say, does the space between your front teeth bother you? And they'd say, yeah, it bothers me. And I would either do a direct composite or I'd do a couple porcelain veneers. The patient spent a lot of money, or it would have been a lot of money at the time. And yet they thanked me for them spending money in my office and spending time. And I thought, wait a minute, dentistry is supposed to be that profession where the patient comes in and says, don't take this personally, but I hate the dentist. And now they were coming in asking for dentistry, or they'd say, I want to make sure my husband comes in. I want you to close this space here. I want you to get rid of this ugly crown. Whatever it was, those were all pivotal moments for me to realize I could absolutely love what I do and I could change people's life in a positive way.
Well, this podcast, as every podcast that's out there, is a call to action. And doctors, number one, I want to remind you you, and we've talked about this on the podcast for 7 years, David. Dentists don't fix teeth. They're about a better life, a better job, a better relationship, and a better self-esteem. And that's what you guys do. And that, when doctors, if you don't realize that, that would be a really good realization for you, because that's going to make what you do much more enjoyable, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I always say eliminate the undesirables. Those are the things in your practice that you don't enjoy. And we all have those. You know, your listeners are thinking that MO on tooth number 16, direct composite on a patient that can't open very wide. I'm not looking forward to doing that restoration, but that is my patient. And for me, it was removable. I did not like doing a removable because I wasn't very good at it. Didn't really like pedo. I love kids, but I didn't really like doing dentistry on kids, right? You know, I'd try to psych myself up and I'd say, okay, we're going to have Mr. Squirty and Mr. Sucky. I was trying to get passionate about it and get this kid under control and enjoying the visit. You know, at the end of the visit, the kid wanted two toys. I wanted two drinks because of the stress. So I thought, I don't want to see kids, because if I saw them on my schedule, that was going to ruin the rest of my day. And I never liked endo. To me, it's like picking locks in the dark. And, you know, it's like you're working. It's like click. Oh, one more number. I think we're in. So I felt like I didn't have the control. So what I started doing is I started doing more of the dentistry I love, even a direct composite back then. I mean, a lot of your listeners are saying, I hate doing direct composites. But again, it was a different reaction from the patient than placing it in an amalgam. And because the patient was thankful for that. So as I started doing composite, I started doing metal-free crowns. And, you know, metal-free crowns, we weren't really doing until the early 90s. And patients would say, oh my God, when can you do this one over here? And then I realized that if I did more of the things I really like, I was happier and looking forward to my day. And I think it's sad when people look at their day and they think, oh man, this is going to be another miserable day because of this procedure or this particular patient or whatever. And when you start eliminating those undesirables so that you look at your schedule and say, wow, this is going to be an amazing day because I get to do this. Then dentists, they have a different look on their profession and a different perspective of their profession.
I love that, David. I mean, it's so, so true. And I know the doctors, I know thousands of dentists from my 41 years in the business, and you can tell who loves what they do and you can tell who it's a grind every day for. It. Again, I hope your words and your lectures, not only on this podcast, but all over the country and all over the world where you speak, that you, and I'm sure you do, motivate, because you're one of the best speakers I've ever heard. So let's talk about mentors. Did you have a mentor? And do you think it's important that a dentist have a mentor?
Yes and yes. I'm going to answer the second part first. I think it's absolutely critical that dentists have a mentor or mentors, someone that is doing what they want to do sometime in their life, especially with young dentists. I don't know if you know this, but I mentor 50 young dentists a year. I've been doing that for 25 years.
I did not know that. I think that's wonderful.
Yes. It's through the Crown Council. We spend 10 hours together in January. Then we meet once a month. And then in the summertime, they all meet with me and I prep a case. And then they come back a month later and we seat the case. So they get to see that and they get to be part of it. So I kind of know what's going on in the head of all these young dentists over the years. But it's absolutely critical that you find a mentor, someone that you look up to, is doing the type of dentistry that you want to do. I don't place implants, but some of your listeners are saying, you know, I like to place implants. Find a mentor that philosophically is on the same side of the page that you are and doing the things you want to do. And that is honest and ethical, because I think we see a lot of really good dentists out there that I think I question their motivation of why they're doing what they're doing. And is it about money or is it about sharing knowledge? So I tell people, you know, especially the young dentists, you know, I hear young dentists say, oh, I want to be you. I want to be a cosmetic dentist. And the first thing I do is I tell them, okay, you found your path. Now slow down. Just slow down. Take your time to realize that destination, but it's the journey as you get to that destination where you're going to learn what you really want to do in life in dentistry. You're going to have failures, you're going to have successes, you're going to grow as you head toward that destination. So mentorship is very, very critical. As far as mentors for me, early on was Bruce Crispin, who is still out there with Aesthetic Confetti. He was an instructor of mine at UCLA, and UCLA
He's
was-
He's in my neck of the woods. He's in Southern California.
Yes, he is. UCLA was very closed-minded. I mean, you had to do it this way and only this way, and it had to be a PFM if you wanted to do a crown. And there wasn't really any creative thinking, and there was no flexibility in really designing treatment plans that were thinking outside the box. And Bruce was an instructor of mine, and he was an out-of-the-box thinker. And when I would present out-of-the-box ideas to him, even as a dental student, he would say, you know what, I think that would work. Or he may say, no, that wouldn't work. He'd say, let's go for it and see what happens. And so we've been friends a really, really long time, really long time. And then Bob Nixon, unfortunately, Bob passed away. Bob wrote the first book on porcelain veneers. We were very, very good friends. He was much older than me, but he mentored me. Everyone that does a porcelain veneer today kind of has to look up and thank Bob Nixon. So I had these mentors early on that did beautiful dentistry, that were out-of-the-box thinkers, and had a philosophy that they wanted to share their knowledge with others so others could benefit the way that they benefit from being that type of dentist.
That's great. Mentors, I've talked to lots of dentists, and mentors change people's life. And I think it's wonderful that you are mentoring young dentists. I mentor young CPAs coming up. It's just fun to do, to see their progression. So, David, you're an opinion leader for sure in dentistry in the United States, around the world. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges coming up as we start 2026?
Well, I think the biggest challenge right now, unfortunately, a lot of your listeners and viewers can certainly attest to this, and you being a CPA, is the cost of dental school and the limit of opportunities for young dentists to get out. You know, the average debt service is almost $500,000 a year. They get out, and where are they going to work? They're not going to go to a bank and say, hey, I need $2 million to build my dream practice. The bank's going to say, yeah, good luck with that. And they're going to have to work for someone. And, you know, I never worked for someone. I decided I just wanted to own my own office from day one, but I didn't have $500,000 to debt service either. And it was possible back then. But it used to be that dentists came out, they could find another dentist to work with and be mentored by and eventually buy that practice or become a partner in that practice. And corporate dentistry and the whole venture capitalist deal has totally changed the picture in this. And unfortunately, it's limiting opportunities for these young dentists to get out. They have debt service, they can't open their own practice most of the time, and they've got to find a job. And the people that are hiring are the DMS. So is the corporate dental offices. And I struggle with that a little bit because the motivation is not always about the patient's health, not for the dentist, but for the dental practice. And I think young dentists can learn bad habits as they're on the quest to pay off their student loans and live a lifestyle that they think a dentist should live. That's number one. I think AI is going to be a little bit of a problem too. You know, I think AI is double-edged sword. I think it's going to take over some of the diagnostic skills that any health practitioner needs. And I have Pearl, which is an AI for radiographs. And yeah, it's awesome. And I think it gives me opportunities to see things I've never seen before. But at the same time, I don't have to be as discerning as I make a diagnosis if it's caries or not caries, right? Because the AI, who's smarter than me, at least in visuals, can tell me what's going on. And my concern a little bit is what's going to happen as technology takes over some of the diagnostic skills that we all need to have. And
yeah, you're absolutely right.
We're seeing that with cosmetic dentistry too, the digital smile designs. I'm not a fan of digital smile designs because I think now it's taking that right side of the brain, that artistic side that I love, it's moving to the left side of the brain. And now it's having, you know, this person that knows computers is now designing an artistic smile instead of me. And that person or that AI is telling what that smile should look like. I'm not a fan of that at all. I think we need to keep the artistic side of smile designs, and it's getting taken over by AI as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how AI and how technology changes dentistry in the next 5 years. I would say 10, but it's going to happen much sooner than that.
Oh, yeah. I was at the California Dental Association convention. I speak there every year, and I walk the floor. We call it Camp Wiederman. I take all the new accountants from the firm and people I know at CDA and stuff. And I have never seen so many AI companies having booths. And I've actually seen some of the AI in action, and it's amazing. But in my opinion, in what you do, nothing will replace human skill and judgment. And that AI cannot ever do that. As far as starting practices, it is amazing to me, David, that, like, for example, I know that, like, Bank of America, they finance startups, and they are now, I think it's either $700,000 or $900,000 to start up a practice. But hundreds and hundreds of doctors are starting practices today. And I'm thinking, where is there somewhere in the United States that doesn't have dentists? But these startups are, you know, if you have a consultant and you learn the right stuff and you take courses from people people like yourself and Dr. Crispin and other people, they are becoming successful and they're able. And what they do is they start practice and then they're still working a couple days a week. So some of these people are working 6 days a week, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So give our listeners like a 35,000 foot view, David, of what is your process in designing and executing a case? I think people would love to hear it because I'm sure that what you do is just at the top of the class.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I don't know if I'll be able to answer the entire question because it's involved, but you know, I think it all starts with listening to the patient. What are their goals? What are their desires, right? And not every patient comes in and wants a full mouth rehab or wants a certain look. And so it's really listening to the patient, showing the patient opportunities that you can provide for them via, again, photographs, being a mock-up in the mouth. And then there's certain guidelines. I mean, I look at nature. I look at unworn smiles and beautiful smiles, and that is subjective. But I look at beautiful smiles and I try to transfer that beautiful natural smile onto a patient that doesn't like their smile or makes a change. So when we design smiles, I mean, we always start with the upper. We always start with the central incisors because those are really the pillar of all the teeth in the mouth. And we treat it like a denture. You know, if a patient was edentulous, I have the opportunity to do whatever I want aesthetically and functionally. We do the same thing with our smile designs. Again, I'm not a digital smile designer. That's not something I really believe in, but I use a flow mold. I mock up a lot of my smiles. So if you came in and I'd say, and I think it's important, and I'll share this with your listeners, is my favorite quote of all time is Wayne Gretzky's, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." And I think too many dentists just bypass even asking a patient. If a patient has a PFM on a front tooth, but it's clinically okay, but it looks terrible to me, that's need dentistry, not even just want dentistry. And I think lots of times us as dentists will just bypass that because it's clinically acceptable. And using Wayne Gretzky's quote, I mean, I would ask you, I would say, how long have you had this crown in the front of your mouth? And you'd say 20 years. And I'd say, you know, I'm looking at it. Actually, it looks good and it's clinically acceptable. How do you feel about it? And if you said, you know, it's fine. And then I say, because I don't want to insult you, I'd say, you know, we're not really using metal-based crowns anymore. The materials we're using now look like teeth and are absolutely beautiful. If you ever wanted it replaced, I'm here for you. And then I finish my exam, and I would, especially with men, because they don't like to admit they don't like things that may be about them, about themselves, is by the time my exam's over, that same person that said, no, that crown didn't really bother me, says, wait, tell me about what you would do for this front tooth again. And if I wouldn't have asked, it would have just bypassed. And I do that with diastemas. I do that with rotated teeth, chipped teeth. I mean, it's just asking, is there something I can do for you? I'm a provider. I want to give you the opportunity to have whatever smile you want. And I think is important in our health history is to ask a question so that basically they're giving you permission as a clinician to follow up on that. That question on my health history form, it says, if you could wave a magic wand, is there anything you'd like to change about your smile? And as I read that, they say, I wish they were whiter, or I wish I didn't have this space, or I wish that I showed more teeth when I smiled, or I liked my smile better 20 years ago. I mean, you're giving me permission, Art, to talk to you about it. Because if I don't have the permission, it can be insulting, right? I mean, if you sat in my chair and you didn't put anything on the health history form, and I said, so is there anything you'd like to do to make your smile prettier than it is now? You know, that's insulting, you know, really, right? But if you give me permission.
You're saying that their smile is not good, right?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's not what people want to hear. And so I think it's really important for us to listen to our patients, ask what we can do for them, because there's a good chance no one's ever asked, and then design it as ideal as much as you can and based on subjectiveness. So again, I think COVID kind of made us tired of looking at a TV screen or a computer screen. So instead of taking a picture and putting it on a screen, I like a mirror. I like to have the patient hold a mirror. It makes it personable and it establishes a stronger relationship, in my opinion. So I can go in and I can mock up. I could say, you know, your tooth is 8 millimeters long. Ideally, it should be 10 to 11. Let me just take a little bit of resin. We could pop that right off. Let me show you what that would look like as it was when you were 20 or 25 years old. Right. And it takes me 10 minutes. I can mock up 6 teeth. Doesn't have to look beautiful, but it just gives you the opportunity now to look in the mirror and say, wow, I'm showing teeth again. I'm showing teeth like I did when I was young. He's like, yeah, you know, teeth
well, you're a master at verbal skills.
Well, I mean, that's another key, I think, too, that I see with these younger dentists. The younger dentists that learn verbal skills and establish relationships are the ones that are going to be successful.
And I always tell David, I always, and I've said this on the podcast many times, is doctors, when you go to a dental convention, you go to Hinman, you go to Yankee, you go to New York, you go to CDA, don't go to a course on occlusion because you know what occlusion is. Go to a course on how to communicate and talk to your patients, because everything, David, isn't it? It's about caring and trust. Your patients will go to the moon for you, I'm sure. I'm sure if you recommend something and you recommend a smile design or something, and they've been a patient for 5 or 10 years, they trust you to the moon. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I'm not selling anything, and they know I'm not selling anything to them. You know, I can create value. I don't really like the word marketing or selling. It's about creating value. If I can create value and it makes sense to you, you're going to make that purchase, right? Whether it's health or whether it's aesthetics. And, you know, the other thing I tell my young dentists, I tell my kids this, that in order to really establish a great relationship, you have to respect and like that person. So even outside of dentistry, I tell my young dentists, when you meet someone and you bond with it, you just like that person, for whatever reason, try to pick those personality traits out of that person that made you want to bond with them, right? Because there's certain things, whether it's the mirroring, whether the way they use their hands, the look in their eyes, they look in the eyes, they talk about other people. I mean, there's all these different things we can look at. But if you meet someone and you think, I like that person for whatever reason, take those perceptions and put them back on yourself and transfer that to your patients as you meet new patients or as you talk to existing patients. And it's about trust and it's about a relationship.
Well, that's absolutely right. I want you to take a second, David, and I want you to talk about your educational courses. I know that you've taught thousands of dentists all over the world. Again, it was through LAB, started with LBI, and then it was PacLive and the Hornbrook Group. I mean, the way I know that lots and lots of dentists took it is because when we were doing accounting for dentists, we would see in the general ledgers checks to PacLive and LBI and the Hornbrook Group over and over and over again. So you must have been doing something right. I know that you're affiliated with the Utah Valley Dental Lab and you do courses. What I'd like you to do now is take a minute, talk about your courses, talk about what you teach, and then I want you to give out your contact information, because doctors, I'll tell you what, if you are looking at becoming a cosmetic dentist, becoming a better cosmetic dentist, really taking your game to the next level, there is no better than David Hornbrook. So David, talk a little bit about what you do with your courses.
Oh, great. Well, I thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Again, obviously, I don't want to sell anything here, but, you know, we're doing some really cool things.
I want them to know about your courses because it's very important.
Yeah, you know, we're changing dentists' life, which then go back and they change their patients' lives. And I've been doing this a long time. When I started LVI in 1995, that was really the first live patient courses where dentists brought a patient and did aesthetic cases under our mentorship. And 3 years later, I formed PacLive in San Francisco. Again, these are live patient courses with a little bit more functional twist, because we saw dentists that would do anterior dentistry and that it would fail because they didn't really understand some things that were going on in the oral cavity that are going to cause that failure to happen. And then after 9/11, dentists didn't want to travel. So I formed the Hornbrook Group. We took it actually on the road, 13 cities across the U.S. We went to Australia, New Zealand, UK, Canada, and we did these live patient courses. And then we took a little bit of a break, and then I formed Clinical Mastery. And down in Arizona, again, trying to find a single facility. And what I'm doing now, it's back as the Hornbrook Group. As you mentioned, Utah Valley Dental Lab, they do all my dentistry. It's an amazing lab, probably one of the best labs in the country. I'm the clinical director of education with them. And so we do 2 live patient courses a year. And these are where a dentist brings a team member and a patient, comes to Salt Lake, so it's easy to get in and out of. For the skiers and the snowboarders, our winter course is a big one. Our January, February, March course is big because everybody can stay and ski or snowboard. So they bring a patient and it's a 2-weekend course. We actually pair you with a master ceramist and I would say a master dentist. I've had mentors in my group, Hornbrook Group mentors, we call them, that have been with me as long as 25 years. And they walk the walk, they talk the talk, and they're amazing people. We assign you a mentor. We assign you a master ceramist lab, some master ceramist. And you go through this course in the design process and the wax up. Then you prep the case, provisionalize the case, come back a month later and seat the case with your ceramist there. So we do 2 of those a year, and they're absolutely incredible and so much fun. I think there's no substitute for actually hands-on learning like that, like patient learning. There's just no substitute for that. And then we do two occlusion courses a year, which are very practical occlusion, because I'm a practicing dentist. Mark Montgomery, who teaches it with me, is a practicing dentist. And
yep.
So we think
I know Mark. He's great. Yeah.
I mean, he is great. And, you know, I want to make sure that whatever you learn Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you can use Monday. You don't have to come back to another course to figure out how to use what you just learned. I am not a believer of that concept at all. I'm not trying to sell another course. We have one occlusion course, and I want you to take that information back on Monday and change the way you look at dentistry. And that's a hands-on course. We do one on the East Coast. We do it in outside of Raleigh and Cary, North Carolina. And then we do one in Utah. And so we do two of those a year. We pair you up with another doctor. You take face bows, you take bites, you talk about airway, and then you talk about different splints. I mean, array of a bunch of important things. And we do two of those a year. So we're doing four courses a year. For those that are interested, one is I want to give my email address out, because not even anything about my courses, I consider myself a mentor. And I think it's sad if someone saw this video, this podcast, and they didn't ever see me again, right? And maybe they have a question. And so my email address is David@Hornbrook.com. Easy. Feel free to email me about anything. I'm a materials expert. I'm like this weird dental materials supplant. Stupid. Can't remember my kids' names, but I can tell you some flexural strength of some material that I just heard about. Yes. I mean, it's stupid. But if you had a materials question about anything, whether it be adhesion or ceramics or communication, feel free to email me. Just on the top, say, hey, I saw you on the podcast with Art Wiederman. I have this question. I'm really good about getting back with people. For those that are interested in the courses, you can email me, but you can also email Natalie, N-A-T-A-L-I-E, at uvdl.com. And she's the concierge for all the courses. She can send you some information and kind of give you the heads up of exactly what's involved with that. Because we limit attendance for that, Art, because we really want a very high mentor to doctor ratio, attendee ratio, so that we can give a lot of personal time. And so we limit that, and those fill up very, very fast. But feel free to email me, David@Hornbrook.com, and we can talk about some of the things that we're doing. But we're having fun. I mean, I love what I do. I've been in practice now, I don't even want to do the math, almost 40 years. I still love what I do, right? And so the way I teach, and you've seen me lecture, the way I lecture, it's about passion. I mean, I love what I do, and I want to make sure whoever's in the audience, whether it's 10 or 3,000, I want them to sense that I love what I do and hope that they can take some of that passion home so that they can enjoy what they do.
Well, you know what, David? I'm required to do math on this podcast because I am a CPA. You graduated in 1986, which tells me that your 40th class reunion is this year probably, right?
Yeah, coming up. Yeah.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun. Let's get back to some other stuff because there's so much I want to talk to you about. And this is a big one. I'm sure that patients have expectations. You know, they know you're a cosmetic dentist. They know that you do top-end work and they want certain things. How do you handle patients who have unrealistic expectations? Excuse me, now how emotions come into this. How do you handle patients who have unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And, you know, as an educator, I hate to say you get better at it with experience, but I'm much better at it now than I initially was, right? I mean, we want to do this case and, you know, whether it be about, you know, your bottom line or you just want to do this case, this aesthetic case. You really, again, going back to listen to the patient, what are their expectations? What are their goals? And just this last week, I told a patient I wasn't going to do her full mouth rehab. She had been to a bunch of dentists.
Really?
She had blamed all her problems on previous dentists. She was in temporaries because she didn't like the previous dentist after he prepped the teeth and then put temporaries on. And she felt he wasn't listening. And so I just said, you know what, I think this is something I don't really want to get involved with, because I know based on previous experience, you're going to spend so much time with this patient that one is you can't make any money and you may not be able to satisfy it because it's not necessarily about the smile. I had a patient one time that she had a very ugly smile, worn out smile. She is 65 years old, a very attractive 65-year-old woman. We gave her a beautiful smile and she said, well, I'm not really that happy because I thought I was going to look like this. And she brought a picture out when she was 20. She was like a model, gorgeous when she was 20. She goes, this is what I thought I was going to look like. And her name was Alicia. And I said, Alicia, you're 65. You're 20 in that picture. I said, I can't make you 20. And I said, but let's look at that smile when you were 20 and see if, is that really what you wanted? And so I blew it up. I scanned it and blew it up. And she had a tooth that was a little crooked and she had a little space between a couple other teeth. And I said, so what you're telling me is you want me to create a space between these two front teeth. And she said, no, I don't want that. And I said, but you just told me you want the smile you had when you were 20. And finally, we got to she just wanted to look like what she did when she was 20. Her smile was
so you are responsible for the aging process is what she's telling you. You're yes. responsible for fixing the aging process from 20 to 65.
So I think it's important for dentists as a community, listen to patients, listen to what are their expectations, what are their goals, and also being very frank with them is, you know, when we're done, we can give you an absolutely gorgeous smile, but it's not going to look like Angelina Jolie. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I had another patient one time that I told she was very picky, and I told her to find some pictures in magazines of smiles that she liked. And she brought in like 24 pictures of Nicole Kidman. And some of it was like a paparazzi across a parking lot. You couldn't even see if Nicole Kidman had teeth, right? And it's not that she even wanted Nicole Kidman's teeth. She just liked Nicole Kidman, right? And so those kind of people can be kind of tough because I'm not going to make her look like Nicole Kidman, right? I can give her probably a nicer smile than Nicole, but I'm not going to make her look like Nicole. So, you know, I communicate a lot with my patients. Oftentimes, if I think they're kind of picky, I tell them to find 3 pictures in magazines and 3 that they like the smile and 3 that they don't like the smile. And they have to give me the reasons why they like them and why they don't. So then we can get some input of what are they looking at? What value is high for them on what a beautiful smile is? I don't want 10 pictures. I want 3 that you like and 3 that you don't like. And you need to be able to tell me what those things are that you do and don't like. Then as we communicate more, because I've had people too that have come in and they've got the same smile with different lipstick, one that they don't like and one that they do, but it's the exact same smile. They didn't know it because there was different lipstick because it was a lipstick ad. And how can I ever communicate with this patient if they tell me they don't like the smile because the canines are too sharp and they like this one because how these canines are rounded? And it's like, you know, these are the same picture, right?
So David, they didn't have a lipstick course at UCLA Dental School?
Yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't. But we do a lot of it through the provisional process. So I communicate a lot with my patients ahead of time to try to get their psyche and really understand what's motivating them to get a beautiful smile, right? Is it to look 50 years younger or just to have a nicer smile and feel better about themselves? And for those patients that think that they're going to look 50 years younger, I turn those people away a lot because I've had them where I just couldn't satisfy them in the past. And then we work through the provisionals. And, you know, instead of provisionals being 2 weeks or 3 weeks, sometimes they're 2 to 3 months because we're changing things constantly until they get to the point that they absolutely love their provisionals and we can take a scan of that, send it to the lab, and the lab can match that.
This episode is brought to you by Bank of America Practice Solutions. If you are thinking about starting or growing your dental practice, we would love to help you take the next step. Email us at dg.connect@bofa.com and we will send you a free business plan template that is perfect for starting the conversation about your future practice. Bank of America Practice Solutions has the expertise, the resources, and the support for your success. Don't wait. Email dg.connect@bofa.com today. Hey, it's Art Wiederman here. You know I don't recommend products lightly. I only share solutions that can genuinely impact your practice's clinical outcomes and bottom line. That's why I really want to tell you about InterView. They've developed an FDA-cleared technology that measures internal tooth mobility, something that traditional methods just can't detect early enough. Here's what that means for your practice. You can identify cracks and loose restorations before they become emergencies. That means better treatment planning, fewer surprises for your patients, and more predictable case acceptance. InterView integrates right into your existing workflow. No complicated processes, just clever diagnostic information when you need it. If you've been looking for a way to elevate your diagnostic capabilities and strengthen patient trust, book a demo at interview.ai. That's interview.ai. Mention my name and you'll get $250 off. That's interview.ai. interview.ai. I saw a video on somewhere of you revealing a new smile to a patient. This was about 10 years ago. I don't know if I ever told you this. And the look on that young woman's face, I was in tears watching her. And that's the satisfaction of what you do in changing people's lives. So young dentists who want to start down this journey. Obviously, your courses are a must. And again, folks who've listened to me for 7 years, you know, I don't get anything from David Hornbrook for advertising. He's the best. And that's what we have on this podcast. But for young dentists, other than your courses, what other steps do you think they should be taking to kind of move down the road that you moved down in your career?
Well, I think reading articles. I don't think YouTube videos are the answer. I don't think you should be an educated cosmetic dentist because you follow someone on Instagram necessarily. I get a lot of people that say, oh, I learned how to prep an ears on a YouTube video by this famous Instagrammer. It's like, dude, it's not how you learn dentistry. As you mentioned, I would spend as much time as I could learning how to communicate and communicate effectively and to be a listener. I think too many dentists, you know, the saying where the reason why God gave us one mouth and two ears, we're supposed to be listening more than we're talking. And I see a lot of dentists that talk the whole exam even as they communicate with their patients. And we need to be better listeners and we need to have empathy for these patients. And I think especially as young dentists, because you come out, you want to do dentistry. You want to learn as much about dentistry and you want to do as much as dentistry as you can to pay the bills and just get faster and better. But you need skills on dealing with people because the mouth is a mouth and that's it. But the mouth is connected to a body and a person and a soul.
And a brain. Yep.
And a brain. And if we can't deal with that whole system and we're only good at working on the mouth, we're not going to be able to do the type of dentistry or as much dentistry as we can or should. The other thing I would always recommend is get a good camera. You know, we have a saying, the more photos you take, the more dentistry you will do. And a good camera. I don't want an iPhone picture of a smile as you communicate with your lab. I mean, the good digital, even the mirrorless cameras now, I mean, they're under $2,500.
They're not that expensive. Tax deductible, folks. Tax deductible.
Yeah, that is deductible. Good point.
Yep.
But take pictures and learn from your photos. And when you take a photo of something and then you put it on your screen and blow it up and man, I missed this. The next time I won't miss this. The other thing is always try to do the very best you can in everything you do. And, you know, the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, they have very strict criteria to be accredited and then get your fellowship. And sometimes it's kind of unrealistic because it has to be perfect, not just really great. And the patient has to love their smile. It has to be perfect. And a great way to learn to get in the habit of being as perfect as you can. And my dentistry is not perfect, but I try to make it as perfect as I can by looking at the dentistry that I've done, putting it on a computer screen, blowing it up and saying, you know what? I could have done something different to make this case better. So my next one, I'll pay attention to that. And then the next one, I'll pay attention to two other things. And you know, when you get it to be excellence is a habit.
That's a great saying. Excellence is a habit. I love that. That's amazing, David. So again, you know, we at the Academy of Dental CPAs, we always talk numbers with our clients and profits. Talk a little bit. I mean, when you do a single crown for a patient, your fee schedule is, you know, whatever it is. But when you're doing a smile design, you know, if you're doing 15 units, this is not 15 units times X. There's skill and care and lab and remake and how do you go through the process of pricing a cosmetic case?
I mean, that's kind of shame because being a CPA, you would say, well, look at your overhead, look at how much time it takes you to do it, which profit you want an hour, you're going to have to charge this amount, right? So one is I would not shortchange the lab aspect of it. You know, Utah Valley is going to cost you $325 a unit for a beautiful, beautiful restoration. You can get one for $69 by sending it overseas, but it's not going to be that from Utah. And you're not going to have the interaction with the ceramist. You're not going to have the ability for an artistic ceramist to call you or text you on a Saturday night and say, hey, let's talk about this and learn from their skill. So use a great lab, take the time, be a great communicator with the ceramist. So as we go back to fees, obviously we have to look at how much does that cost you and how long is it going to take you? You know, for me, if I did a 10-unit veneer case, I would schedule 3 hours in my office. I could probably do it too, but I don't want to rush it. But 10 units, and I know all your listeners or most all of them, if I said, would 10 units be a good day for you? And they'd all say, yeah, 10 crowns would be a great day. Well, if it can be on one patient, and it takes 3 hours. That's a really great day, right? So how long is it going to take you? Now, one thing I would recommend from those that are just learning to do more aesthetic-based dentistry is do the dentistry when you're not stressed or rushed by other things going in your office. When I first started doing these cases, I did them on my day off. My dental assistant would come in. I didn't have hygiene checks. I didn't have another patient in an hour. I could do that. I could make money. I could take a bunch of photos. vent some echo, you know, I could take a bunch of photos and I could treat that case and spend the quality time that it needed on that case, right? If it took me 3 hours, it took me 3 hours and I got to go home early. If it took me 6 hours, there's not hygiene checks I have to make. There's not other patients that are waiting in the reception room that I'm behind 3 hours. Then what I did is once I realized I could get it in somewhere around 4 hours, then I could schedule it as an afternoon. So that's my only patient in the afternoon from 12 to 4. Then I'm not rushed. If I get done in 2.5 hours, I'm done early. If it takes me 5 hours, there's not other patients waiting. And then the more you do, the more you can say, okay, it takes me 2 to 3 hours. So let's just block it in 3 hours and we can stick it in any place in our schedule, right? So I really haven't answered your question yet, but so the cost—
I'm learning as you're talking, so keep going.
The cost of doing business, obviously, what does it cost you for that restoration or smile design, right? How much do you need to make an hour and how many hours is it going to take you, right? I mean, part of it, the reason I did it on my day off is even if I didn't make any money, I loved it so much and I was learning so much and I was getting cases out there in my community that now will talk about it. And then I was getting more referrals because people were seeing my smile. So I was getting all these benefits. So even if I made zero on it, it wasn't a big deal, right? But we need to make money. So the other thing too is people say, well, my fees, I could never use a lab that charges $300 a unit. Well, this is a smile design case. Insurance isn't going to pay for it anyway. So, and I tell my, especially my young docs, let's say you charge $1,500 a unit, right? And you use a lab that they charge $125 a unit. For a smile design case, the patient, it's not insurance based. So if you do 10 veneers at $1,500, that's 15 grand, right? But because of the fees and your overhead, you can't use a lab that's going to give you the case that your patient deserves, which makes your job as clinician harder because the lab's not as good, right? So why not charge $1,800 a unit for your smile design cases? It'll take the headaches away from now you've got a great lab that will be your partner through the process. It gives you the opportunity to now take 5 hours to do the case instead of three. It gives you the opportunity that if you need to play with temporaries two or three times in the process between prep and scene, it gives you that leeway to do it. And you know, the other thing is, if I came to you, Art, and I said, I could give you the smile of your dreams, you're going to look amazing, and it's $15,000. Or if I said, it's $18,000. Both those are a lot of money, right? $15,000 to me is the same as $18,000.
Absolutely right. And yes.
And so why not do the $1,800? Again, I'm just picking numbers out of the woodwork. But, and then it's less stress because you're using the lab that you want to use, you're getting that teamwork, and you have the ability to spend more quality time with this patient. That makes sense?
Oh, I make total sense, David. Absolutely.
And, you know, I keep raising my fees because I'm spending so much time and we're doing a lot of stuff. And again, there's a whole other topic. You know, I see my patients every week throughout the process. In my schedule, it takes about 6 weeks from prep to seat. So I don't just prep the case and I see you in 6 weeks. We see you every single week to look at temporaries.
Make sure everything is good. Yeah.
Yeah. We have the hygienist meet with you twice during those 6 weeks. Just make sure that you're maintaining the temporaries. And so there's added benefits. And for me, I need to raise my fees for that so that I feel comfortable about saying, hey, we have another hour. We're going to look at Art. He wanted some changes in his temporaries. I'm not going to come in and say, all right, let me just adjust this and not give you the time of day. I mean, I'll schedule an hour if I need to for you, right?
Because it's all about making the customer or the patient happy and giving, walking in out there.
Yeah. The provisionals, diagnostic and functional. If you don't like your provisionals the way they look now, or if you're breaking your provisionals, you're not going to like the final ceramics either, right?
That's right.
So,
that's right.
You know, as dentists start to do more, then they can alter their fees based on really how much do they need to make to feel comfortable.
Yeah. I want to get to a couple more things because unfortunately, David, we're running out of time here. Tell us about the most memorable, and I'm sure there are many, but is there one case that you've done in your 40 years that just stands out that says, this is just the best thing I've ever done? Maybe pick one.
Well, I've had some really cool cases. That one case, obviously, that you saw where the reveal and the woman cried.
I saw that was so cool.
We did one through the young dentist where it was a firefighter out of, I think, Houston. And he looked in the mirror and it's kind of, we're all waiting for the reaction. And he just starts bawling because it's the first time in his life that he's had an amazing smile and felt good about himself, right? So times like that are amazing. But I had a really fun experience once. This is several years ago, over 20 years ago. And I had a woman that was very artistic and she worked with pottery and kind of like your son. Is it your son or daughter that does stone?
My son. Yeah.
Okay. So she did pottery and she worked with clay, right? And she asked about how were these things made? And I was using Empress at the time, which is similar to Emax and Lisi Press. So they're waxed and then they're invested and then the ceramic is pressed into this burned out tooth mold, right? But it all starts with the wax process, right? And just like a sculpture, they'll make it out of clay and then they make a mold and they cast something into that burned out mold. So these pressed ceramics started as wax. And I said, I just want to be more part of the process. And so I realized that photos were not going to be the three-dimensional process that she's going to benefit from. So I actually took my scans or impressions at the time. I took them, sent it to the lab, and instead of them sending ceramics back to me, I had them send the wax ups. So we went, and not a full, each individual unit fit on that die. These were going to be the crowns or the veneers when we're done. So we actually put them in her mouth as wax, and I held the mirror for her, and she took a carving instrument, and she actually contoured the wax up in her mouth.
No way.
It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And it was just she liked them initially. She goes, yeah, there's some minor little changes. I want this. And I said, go for it, right? And she would make these little changes. And then that was really her art. So her smile was her art. Then we could just slide those off, send them back to the lab. They could go ahead and invest those and press them. And she got curd teeth in her mouth. And that was kind of life-changing for me because it was like, how cool is this for her to be that much part of the process? And I kind of just sat back and enjoyed it. So that was a moment. But, you know, it's just anytime a patient looks in the mirror, and I think lots of times the provisionals are even more of a reveal than the finals, right? And if they've had diastemas or short teeth, then they're missing teeth. And now you give them beautiful provisional. And they look in the mirror. And of course, you know, I always say everyone in the room has allergies at that moment, right? Because it is very emotional.
Yeah.
And that's because people don't get emotional over a root canal or a filling or a single crown in the posterior. And it's the emotions that will allow us to love what we do and look forward to our next patient. You know, anytime we experience something like that, we want to experience it again. So it drives us to find that experience. And then it makes it enjoyable.
So I don't know if you remember, but 20 years ago, I called you up and I said, David, we're having our Academy of Dental CPA meeting at the Hotel Del Coronado. And how would you like to speak to a bunch of dental CPAs? And you thought about it and said, man, that would be cool. And you did an amazing job of not using all this technical stuff that we didn't understand, although our group understands all the technical stuff, not as much as you, obviously. But I did ask you one question. And I'm going to ask it to you again. The question I asked you was, I said, David, in 10 years, what's going to be the biggest change in dentistry? And you immediately said, the end of impression materials. I don't know if you remember that, but you said that. So now we're in 2025, and we're not quite there, but digital scanners and digital printers, we're getting there pretty quickly. So now it's 2025. What do you see coming forward in dentistry in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, we know AI, but what things in the world of being a dentist and technology and everything do you see going forward? You're on the cutting edge.
Yeah, I would see two things, and I don't know how quick they're going to happen, but AI obviously is a book, right? AI is going to take over our diagnostic skills, which is kind of sad, but it's going to interpret things. Just like even, I got a chest x-ray the other day, and it was AI that was reading the chest x-ray. I mean, he could have been a radiologist or he could have been a college kid that was an English major. It didn't really matter because the AI was making the diagnosis, right? So AI is going to change it. I think robotics, which a lot of people don't really talk about, robotics are going to hit dentistry. They're already hit it in the implant world where we're not going to use loops anymore. We're going to use a computer screen. They're doing it in brain surgery, they're doing it in cardiovascular surgery, where we're going to be able to take a scan, maybe not even design the case. AI will design the prep and they'll plug it in and there'll be a robotic arm with a burr that goes in and preps their tooth. And what's crazy, and they already have this, I have not used it because I don't think it's ready yet, but where the crown is made ahead of time. So I look at your tooth, AI will tell me how that tooth should be prepped based on what's existing and what the decay scenario is, right? Then the software will design the prep. It'll feed into a robotic arm. Then AI will design a crown ahead of time based on what the software told them the prep is going to look like. that's going to come, maybe not in my dental lifetime, but that's the opportunities that will change the world.
So like the next step past CAD/CAM technology, where the, you know, the CAD/CAM designs, but the dentist is still sitting there designing. You're now saying, we're going to take maybe the dentist and then the AI is going to design it and the robotics is going to make. I mean, that's crazy.
I think that's probably what we're talking about, McCain. We're going to say, remember when we have loops? Remember when we had electric hand pieces? Remember how cool that was, right? And that's going to be, yeah, I remember those archaic things that we used to do.
I saw the first intraoral camera at the California Dental Association in 1989. It was manufactured by Fuji, and it was the size of your bedroom, and it was $42,000, and everybody was oohing and aahing, and now we know that an intraoral camera is a little thing you hold in between your fingers, and it's a couple thousand bucks. So let's put a bow on this. This information is so incredible. I'm so excited that you took the time for my listeners, and I think it's going to be valuable to all of them. Let's put a bow on this, and maybe anything else that you think dentists should be working on to be better dentists? Because you've made it to the top of the class. You've mentored thousands of people. You've changed thousands of people's lives. What last final advice, and I'm going to want you to give out some more your contact information and mention the courses one more time, but what information do you think that dentists should be going forward that, you know, maybe you haven't covered?
Well, I think we covered a lot. You had some great questions.
We did.
I think is stay your course. Determine where you think that pot of gold is going to be and then head toward it. You know, I always tell people that our destination is like a pot of gold. You see it over there and you think, oh, this is the road I'm going to take to get there. And then when you get there, you realize it moves somewhere else and you need to deviate a little bit or, you know, not have such a straight path. But the best advice is don't settle. Don't settle and be passionate about what you do. And it makes me sad when I work with young dentists, and you've worked with young dentists in their 40s and even 50s. I consider young dentists these days, but where they look forward to 5 in the afternoon instead of 8 a.m. They look forward to Friday instead of Monday. There are so many dentists, and there's all these dental groups that are looking how to get out of dentistry, whether it be real estate or finance. And it's like, dude, you went to school for 8 years or 9 years with undergrad at dental school. You're a dentist. Why don't you try to enjoy it? And I think, especially the way things are changing with technology and materials and knowledge, is we should look forward to 8 a.m. on the moon. And it saddens me when I see a young dentist say, oh, it was a miserable day. I can't wait till Friday. It's like, we all like our weekend. I mean, I get that. But we should look forward to 8 a.m. because things are changing so fast that, Art, if you were my patient at 8 a.m. on Monday morning, I can offer you things that I couldn't offer maybe even last week because of new knowledge or new technology. But certainly something different that I could have offered you 5 years. And that's what makes dentistry exciting, because as things change, we grow, we evolve, but we're still chasing that road to excellence and get our pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Well, Dr. David Hornbrook, you are a gift to the dental profession. Thank you so much. Now, I thought I saw something. By the way, I didn't mention this at the beginning. I'm going to be speaking at the Chicago Midwinter Meeting, third week of February. I think, aren't you also there?
I'll be there, but I'm not speaking this year. I speak about every two.
So folks, if you are at the Chicago Midwinter Meeting, come and see me. Come say hi. Say you're a podcast listener. David, one more time. Your courses are through Utah Valley Dental Lab, and the email to get a hold of you if they're interested. I mean, what the website. Do you know the website name?
Yeah, if you go to uvdl.com. So that's an acronym for Utah Valley Dental Lab, uvdl.com. Sure. There's a bar across the top that says events. There's a couple of things. One is resources. If you click on resources, it's a drop-down menu, and I have step-by-step cementation guides, smile design guides, how to take bite registration on complex cases. And these are all free PDFs. And then there's on the menu a drop-down that says upcoming events. And those talk about the dates that are available. But I would tell people just to email Natalie@uvdl.com directly. And just say, hey, saw David and I'm interested in these courses. Give me a little heads up. When are they? How much do they cost? What's available? And she's awesome. And she will definitely get them to that.
I doubt you have anybody that works with you who is not awesome. David, hang with me while I take the podcast out. And thank you so much for such great information for our listeners. It's wonderful. Thank you, everyone. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast again. Please tell your friends to, you know, download it every week, subscribe to it every week. Again, I've got 2 events. I will be at the Chicago Midwinter. I'm doing an hour and a half course on metrics of numbers. If you want to geek out on numbers with me, I'll be there. And an hour and a half on financial planning. I love the the Chicago meeting. And then on February 28th, we have a live event. Email me at artwiederman@gmail.com for more information on transitions if you're buying or selling a practice. I want to thank my wonderful, wonderful sponsors, Bank of America Practice Solutions, and my home team, the Academy of Dental CPAs. This is the official podcast of the Academy of Dental CPAs. And for everyone listening, we will see you next time with another great, great podcast. This is Art Wiederman for the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.